Welcome back to Destination Unlocked with me, Daniel Edward.
Just about ready to depart.
Please make sure your seatbelt is not fastened and do make yourself comfortable, please.
In today's episode of Destination Unlocked, we're chatting to Francesco Casale of Cyclo Holidays about Emilia-Romagna. Now, Italy is one of my absolute favourite countries, and if I were to move to Italy to live there, I would move to Bologna, which is within this region of Italy called Emilia-Romagna. But today, Francesco is going to take us wider than that. He's going to take us to some of the countryside, some of the villages, some of the other towns. This is a part of Italy which is so well known for food. It's also really well known for its motors, its cars, its bikes. And that is where we really get to know Francesco, because he was a competitive cyclist. And he was cycling in these fields, in these hills, as he was growing up, training. It took him moving away from Emilia-Romagna. He moved to London and then he realized how beautiful his home is. And he now takes people back to Emilia-Romagna on cycling holidays, which sound absolutely fantastic. Enjoy. So Francesco, where are you unlocking for us today?
We are talking about Emilia-Romagna, which is my region and where I love to bring people to.
I love Emilia-Romagna because if I were to move to Italy, I would be moving to Emilia-Romagna. Specifically, I would be moving to Bologna. I just absolutely fell in love with it. But the surrounding area, the countryside, the towns, the villages, it's just a spectacular part of Italy. But it's a part of Italy that a lot of people haven't heard of.
Yeah, it's a tricky part for me. When you say Emilia-Romagna, people don't often know what you're talking about. Many people recognize Bologna, some recognize San Marino because it's a state within Emilia-Romagna, but the whole region is not very known. It had a big boom in the 70s, 80s, mainly with Germans and Central Europe, but not many people know exactly what it is. And yeah, they don't know what they're missing out.
So in a snapshot, what are they missing out on? How would you describe Emilia-Romagna?
From the name, you can tell that there is two parts to it, so Emilia and Romagna. People from Emilia, they kind of feel like they're from a different region than Romagna. So you've got a lot more of a flat land. When you go to Emilia, you've got the Po Valley, so essentially the Po crosses the whole of Emilia. In terms of food, there's quite a big difference between Emilia and Romagna. You've got produced from the Parma and Modena region, and also cars. When you go to Modena, you've got Lamborghini and Ferrari, so you've got some big names there. And then going to Romagna, I would say it's the more southern part, not just geographically, but also in terms of people as well. People are a lot warmer, a lot more seafood. You're closer to the coast. It's kind of like two regions in one, essentially. But in terms of food, you get some of the best food or the most recognized food in Italy. So from the Parma ham, Parmigiano, the balsamic vinegar, all of the egg pastas, you know, they all come from Emilia-Romagna. The famous bolognese sauce, which is actually ragu. A lot that you know about Italian food come from that particular region.
We'll talk more about food in a bit because the region, it's sort of nicknamed the stomach of Italy. Yeah. And there's so much to eat there that we must talk about it. But before we talk about food, let's talk about some of the landmarks. Maybe it's natural landmarks, maybe it's built landmarks. But if you were trying to think about a multi-stop trip through the region, what are the main stops that you might want to include on your route?
Starting from the south, so where I'm from and based, so from Cattolica Rimini. I mean, Rimini would be the first big town. I am from Cattolica, which is the last town of Emilia-Romagna before Marche. So starting from Rimini, I would say this would be the first big stop. Rimini, it's known to be a touristy hotspot for Italians, but mainly for the beach, so where the Riviera starts. The good thing about Rimini is you've obviously got the beach side, which is amazing, amazing seafood, but you also have an incredible history behind Rimini. It was one of the Roman stop. The Flaminia ends, so it's the road from Rome comes to the north, essentially, and then the Emilia road starts. So it was an important point for the Roman Empire. So you've got a lot of like Roman history, and the town center of Rimini is also very beautiful. There's a lot to see, not just for the beach, but there's a lot to see also in terms of history. So you've got the countryside of Rimini. So as soon as you move into the inside, you've got some beautiful hills. Again, I'm going to have to go back to the food, but you've got some incredible small producers that you can go and visit and try, whether it's wine, cheeses, hams. You could spend definitely like a day or two in Rimini, enjoy a bit of the beachside, and then obviously move on the inside, visit the town center, Fellini, one of the most famous Italian movie director. He's the director of La Dolce Vita and Amarcord. The whole La Dolce Vita, which is essentially the sweetness of doing nothing, that comes essentially from this area, from Rimini. We're going back to the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. This area was very popular with tourists, not just from Italy, but from around the world as well.
And that was what boosted international tourist interest in Italy.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because, well, not many people know now that it's from there.
If you had asked me to guess, I would have guessed Sorrento.
It would probably be most people's guess, yeah. As I said, I would almost describe the people from Romagna as the most southern people of the north, essentially. Emilia-Romagna is essentially a region from the north. It's considered like we are just above the center. And there is this, in Italy, people feel like the people from the south, well, in Italy, people from outside generally describe the people from the south being warmer and more welcoming, and the people from the north being a bit more cold. And Emilia-Romagna, I would say, is probably the most southern north region of Italy in terms of how people are and how welcome you feel when you go to a restaurant, when you go to like anywhere, really, like how people welcome you. You feel like part of the family, essentially, anywhere you go. So that's one big part of Romagna. And that's in terms of like the sea and the beach itself, you're not looking at the best of Italy, if that makes sense. But they are very famous for service beach. So if you're someone that likes to have a bed and a shade and all the services with it, then it's the right place. The costs are not extortionate, so it's not as bad as if you were to go and try to hire somebody, for instance, in Sorrento. It's cheaper, but you get a lot more. Most of the beaches have got gym, swimming pool. Like, although there is sea, there's also swimming pool. Normally, you also have restaurants at the beach, so you normally spend the day there. They've got changing rooms. They've got games for the kids. So the main reason why Italians spend their summers there, it's very popular for Italians to go there, is the services. Unfortunately, there are not many free beaches, but generally each town will have at least 5-6, which is very odd for people coming from outside to go there and see like there is not actually a free beach.
That massively surprised me. When I first went to Italy to a beach, I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I, they, at the time, and this was quite a while ago, it was already €10 to just get onto the beach. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's definitely a shock for most tourists, but it's one of the reasons why Italians go there. Me, as a person from there, I really love it. I really love to go there and have all those services. But I can understand why some people find it weird. Moving up, I would definitely do a stop in Ravenna. There's so many beautiful places to view in Ravenna, like the mosaics and some of the best churches in Europe, I would say. It's another UNESCO site. It depends, obviously, how much time you have. But in general, if you're looking to do like a week trip, I would probably spend a couple of days. You could spend a couple of days at the beach, then maybe a stop in Ravenna for a day, and then move up to Bologna. Bologna is probably a city that I would spend a couple of days for sure. There is so much to see. Obviously, one of the oldest universities in the world, I would say. Definitely in Europe. I think in Turkey, there is one that is meant to be the oldest in the world. But yeah.
But that's probably on the Asia side. So Bologna
still the one in
Europe. Still holds the Europe title. Yeah.
And then again, Bologna, it's got some of the best food scene in the world. Look what you get for your money as well, the quality of food, even in just a general osteria, which is, osteria is essentially what used to be the stop for people traveling, you know, like where the oster, which is the host of the osteria, would bring your plate out and it's what they serve for the day with just your small glass of wine. I don't know if you've, you know, kind of like what I'm picturing, but it's like the osteria glass. It's like a tiny, small glass that it would almost be considered like a shot glass. A jar would come out, so you wouldn't have the fancy bottles, but it's just the local wine, and there is one. There's not many options, but it is a great wine. Obviously, nowadays, the osteria has gone a bit more fancy. You've got a few options in terms of wine and food, but the price is still very reasonable and you get really good quality food. Generally, the pasta is homemade and everything is locally sourced. And this is one thing that I really love about Emilia Romagna because of like having a lot, like, even in Rimini and obviously the Riviera, having a lot of Italian going on holiday there, you're not really able to get away with tourist traps.
That's a really good point.
You get really authentic Italian food.
The best meal I've had in Italy so far was in Bologna, and it was in this cafe. It didn't look like anything from the outside. Yeah. If I had seen that cafe in London, I would have walked past. There's no way I would have gone in. And I went in and I had risotto. Oh my gosh, it was the best risotto I've ever had. And it was cheap. It was really reasonably priced. It was delicious. And it wasn't fancy. It wasn't showing off in any way. It just knew it was good and it was good.
Yeah, I mean, that's one, like, some of the best meals I've had. You know, I do like eating, obviously, as an Italian, even like Michelin star restaurant, fancy places. But I would say some of the top, the best meals I've had, it would be in places like you are describing, where you wouldn't expect. Generally, in these places, the owner is the person cooking. And I think it reflects the love for what they're doing. You get all of that. So there's a lot into play. And generally, it is great food. So all of that combined together makes it into a great experience. And of course, being not expensive makes it more enjoyable at the end of the meal if you've had a great meal.
100%. We're going to talk more about some of the other towns in Emilia-Romagna in a moment, but I want to talk about cycling, because this is really the way that you experience it the most, and the way you share the region with people. You've started a company called Cyclo Holidays. You take people specifically out to see places on bike. How did that come about?
I used to race back in Emilia-Romagna for about 11 years, since I was small, all the way to like 19, 20 years old. I didn't quite appreciate what I had when I was living there, because I was training, I was going around with the bike every day. But for me, it was just like the home roads. You know, people that live in Cornwall nowadays, they probably feel like this is just home, you know. But then when you go and explore it from a different point of view, things change. So I stopped cycling. When I moved to London, I stopped cycling for about 5-6 years. I just had a kind of like rejection for cycling, because I had to do it as a job. So I didn't enjoy it anymore. And then I went back with the bike one time and I decided to cycle around for the first time. I was restarting. I wasn't fit at all. So every climb was a struggle. I remember like going up this hill and getting to the top and just looking around, and I just suddenly realized how beautiful like the landscape was and what I had around me. It was spring, so obviously it was sunny, perfect temperature for cycling. I just had this moment of realization, and it came back to my mind. I really want to bring people here. Surely people should know more about these. You know, the food they eat comes from our area. Every time they talk about Italian food, a lot of what they talk about is from our area. So why people don't come and see themselves? And obviously the cycling. There is a massive culture of cycling in Emilia-Romagna. I had previously started my own bicycle repair. I think that gave me the courage to try and fulfill all my dreams, which is, you know, being in the bike world, but also start Cyclo Holidays, which would be bringing mainly British people to Emilia-Romagna. The other thing that we do with Cyclo, we have a community which is growing incredibly fast, and it's quite exciting for me. So we organize 3 free rides per week in London where people can join. I try to include all levels possible, from people that show up for the first rides all the way up to people that have been cycling for a long time and they are quite fast. So I try and keep those rides open. For me, it's a way to get people talking about Cyclo and eventually come on a holiday and hopefully to Emilia-Romagna.
To leave Emilia-Romagna just for a brief moment, if someone is in London and wants to join your community, how can they do that?
We normally use Strava. If you look for Cyclo on Strava, I don't know if you know the app, but it's what people use generally. If you cycle, there's a 99.9% chance that you're using Strava. It's a way to record your activities, but it's also a great social cycling platform, because you can watch others, what they're doing, what rides they've done, and kind of give them a kudo and comment on their ride, essentially. So anyone that cycles generally uses a Strava. So we have a club on Strava, and you can join there and join any of our rides. We also have a WhatsApp chat where we post all of our activities. And finally, if you go and look for Cyclo Holidays on Instagram, then you can see everything we're doing, from the community rides to the holidays and any other event that we do.
That's such a great idea. Going back towards Emilia-Romagna, there's flatlands and then there are also some hills.
Yeah.
You're just north of a mountain range.
Yeah.
How easy is it to cycle, or do you need to do some training before you get there if you're going to do a cycling trip?
The good thing about cycling those days is that we have e-bikes, and e-bikes enables all levels of riders to ride together. In general, as a cycle holidays, the main reason why I put holidays there is because it's a holiday. So we want to enjoy ourselves. We want people to obviously go on a bike, and it's a bit of an exercise, but at the same time, it's not a race. It's not a training camp. It's more of enjoying what's around you. Stop for pictures, stop for a coffee. You do need a certain level of fitness in sense of like you're going to be spending quite a few hours, 4, 5, 6 hours on the bike. So it would be naive to think that you take your bike and you've never cycled before and you'll be able to sit on a saddle for 5, 6 hours. So I would recommend try and do some rides and get used to that level of cycling. One side of cycle holidays that I am developing the next year or so, it would be more of an agency side where people can go and experience the places that we experience, but at their own pace. The great thing about Emilia-Romagna is that we have some partners, bike hotels, that have facilities. So they've got bike rooms, they have rentals, and they organize rides literally at all levels. They even do some like 30, 40, 50 kilometers ride, which they could be like a couple of hours for people that have never ridden before with e-bikes. And when it comes to e-bikes, the good thing is that you're not scared of climbs. You're going to be going up the climbs quicker than the people that are trained. So that makes it quite enjoyable. I think with cycling, people find enjoyment in so many different ways. You've got people that really want to push themselves and train and get fit and faster, but you get other people that are just happy to just let the wheels roll and just enjoy what's around. Some people just like to get on the bike and just look around. Of course, I'm always going to say cycling is the best thing. If you compare it to like running, you're not going to be able to cover the same distance, but also being able to look around. If you are in a car, you're driving, you have to look at the road. If you want to go somewhere, you're going to have to stop and park, and it's a lot more complicated. If you're on a bike, you're going a lot slower, so you can look around. You can take your time to stop anywhere and just take a picture and restart. I think it's a completely different way of traveling, and I think more and more people are enjoying and understanding what that type of enjoyment is.
When you're doing a cycling holiday, so yeah, you're going from end to end of Emilia-Romagna, or you're doing a 30-kilometer stretch, yeah, between two places, is everything on your back? Are you traveling with all of your luggage with you?
So generally, the trip that I organize are based in Romagna, so in Cattolica, which is my town, and we go back to the same place all the time. So we generally do a ride and come back to the same place. I find these to be the most relaxing way of traveling. We are now organizing more trips where we'll be moving in different places, and it really depends what the customer wants. We can organize all type of trips. Mainly the trips that I organize stay in the same place. I mentioned before there is these bike hotels, which you can find quite a few in Emilia-Romagna. And they've got everything from the bike room where you can safely store your bike with all the tools. They normally have a bike manager, so a person that can help you if you have any issues. They've got daily rides. Sometimes they have 2-3 different levels, daily rides going out with guides. You can show up there even without a bike. They will have the cycling clothes and everything. They will wash your clothes daily, so you get a fresh kit every day. Like, the services for bikes are incredible. So I think that's also why many people, they go one time and they will go back every single year. A nice hotel with a swimming pool and you are literally by the beach makes it into a really relaxing experience and holiday. There will be people that like to move one place to another and explore a bit more, and you can do that in Emilia-Romagna really well. There's so many places to see moving from the south all the way up to the north.
And that's called bike packing now, isn't
yes,
it?
Yeah, correct, yeah. I think it's definitely a phenomenon in cycling that is growing, bike touring, bike packing. There are obviously two ways of doing it. There is like the real bike packing, which would be having just a tent at the back of your bike and stopping and camp where you can, essentially. That would probably be the most adventurous, but at the same time, it would really connect you with people and places, because in some situations, you have no choice but ask strangers and locals where to sleep or where to go and what to do. Sometimes in those situations, your phone is not enough. Google doesn't help you. So you literally go and ask people, oh, where am I going to sleep tonight? So I would say that's definitely the best way to explore and know places and really get to know people. And generally, when you get to know the people of the area, you get to know the culture, you get to know what's around you, and you really immerse yourself in the culture and in the place. That's one side. And then you can do bikepacking, which I've done many times with my wife in order to convince her to cycle with me, which will be stopping in nice places. There are many agriturismo where generally to be called an agriturismo, not only you obviously have to have the place to sleep, generally they also serve food, whether it's breakfast or some they do lunch and dinner, but they have to produce something that they sell in their place. So whether it's the breakfast, they will make their own jams. Some go to the extent of producing everything they serve on the table, even the meats and the cheese. And so I think that's one of the best way to bikepack in a comfortable and really luxurious way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, doing things locally, I think, is really the way to go with most regions, but Emilia-Romagna stands out for me. If people want to find out more about Cyclo Holidays, where should they go to find out more about you?
So I would say the first channel would be Instagram. We're very active on there. We have a website where you will find the trips that will be coming out for next year. We are developing an agency site, which means you can contact us with a form and tell us what do you want to go and for how long. Generally, we tend to first create a trip, go with our guests as a group, and then advertise that area, not just in Emilia-Romagna. Obviously, the main focus is Emilia-Romagna. But generally, we tend to organize a trip first, go there with our guests, and then having a local operator we work with for those trips. And that gives us then the possibility to offer the same trip for anyone else that want to experience that area. So if you see one of our trips and you can't make the dates that we are going out, or you find that might be a bit too fast or too slow for your liking, you can replicate the exact same trip with all the wine tasting experiences, having a guide if you wish, or we can provide all the GPX files, which is the routes, and also advise you with the best places, book all your accommodation. If you want to do also experiences like wine tasting, olive oil tasting, some cooking class, we can organize all of that for you and create a trip essentially to your need.
I've never done a cycling holiday. Actually, I've never even thought of doing a cycling holiday, but chatting with Francesco Casale has really made me very tempted. It seems like an amazing way to see Emilia-Romagna, and so long as I've got the right saddle, I think I can do it. If you're interested, you can check out his website, cycloholidays.co.uk, or indeed, as he suggested, go to Instagram, where he is at cycloholidays, C-Y-C-L-O holidays. Well, I think it's time for a bit of a quiz. Which city is nicknamed La Grassa, the fat one, for its food culture?
Bologna.
Yeah. This one I found interesting. What's the only authentic ingredient allowed in traditional Modena balsamic vinegar besides grapes?
Ooh, that is a tough one. The only ingredients allowed...
I wouldn't have got this one right.
Just trying to think now. The only other ingredient I would want to say about your yeast, but like that's obviously not... I'm quite curious now.
So maybe it's slightly a trick question, because technically there's only one ingredient in balsamic vinegar, which is grapes.
Yeah.
The answer is thyme. For Modena balsamic vinegar, it must age for at least 12 years. That's one of the rules.
Oh, okay. Okay. And that makes sense. It is definitely a tricky question. I've had some of the best experiences in terms of food as well in Modena. One cool thing about going to the balsamic vinegar would be anywhere in the town, there are shops that sell balsamic vinegar, but they generally are from producers, and they would show you and let you try all their best vinegars from, you know, the 12 years old all the way up to the 30 years old. You probably end up leaving with one anyway. You'll probably buy one. You might not buy the 500 pound bottle, but once you've tried a few, like, you'll probably leave with the bottle anyway. And it's essentially the best way to do a balsamic vinegar tasting, completely free. There is also a beautiful market, an open market where you you can literally try all the best food of Modena, from, you know, the all the hams, the cheese, with the best balsamic vinegar.
It does sound like Modena is the place to go if you're a foodie.
Yeah, I did actually visit Osteria Francescana, which was for 3 years in a row voted the best restaurant in the world. So this was a present from my wife for my birthday. And it was the chef Bottura, rated one of the best chefs in the world. He's from Modena. So it was one of my dreams to be able to visit that restaurant. So I had that luck.
Staying in Modena for the next question, which luxury car brand was founded in Modena?
Lamborghini, a Ferrari. But,
yeah, you get two points there, which means you've caught up now from the point that you didn't get for question two. you're now ahead of the game. What is the sparkling red wine that is typical of Emilia-Romagna?
Lambrusco, which is one of my favorite wines. I love Lambrusco in general, but there is a couple of versions of Lambrusco. Obviously, the classic red, very sweet, or kind of sweeter. And then more and more, you get to have a more dry Lambrusco. I do like the more dry. It's an amazing wine. It's becoming more and more popular. You do get it quite a lot here in London now. Generally, if you go in an Italian restaurant, you tend to find it. And as I said, there is more dry version now. And some of them, they go into a more refined aging process, not just a first aging in the barrels, but also they do an aging in the bottle, so closer to the champagne method, so the bubbles become thinner and the wine is a little bit more sophisticated. I would say the sweeter one is more a convivial wine and easy for anyone really to drink. The drier, it goes well with most of the meal, with sweet food or with meat and cheese, sometimes with some pasta dishes as well and fish. So it's a very versatile wine.
Mm-hmm. Final question in our quiz. What pasta shape is Bologna famous for serving with ragu?
Tagliatelle, but what? Yeah. I mean, pappardelle, tagliatelle. I mean,
specifically, it is not spaghetti.
Not spaghetti, no, definitely not. I don't think I've seen spaghetti with bolognese sauce in Italy. Is not something you might have it at home when you are small, like a child. You might be allowed if for some reason you've run out of tagliatelle, but not generally. That's not the go for when it comes to tagliatelle pasta. You have tagliolini, which is a thin tagliatella, then you have tagliatelle, which is the standard size, and then you have pappardella, which is the wider one. Thickness wise we are at a similar thickness, but width changes, and normally is to be served with different type of sauce. So the tagliolini suits very well seafood, tagliatella with the ragu, more commonly known as bolognese, and then the pappardella would go really well with some wild boar and like some more sort of wild animals.
Why didn't it get called taglione?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know why they changed it.
It gets a totally different name. If people are heading to Emilia-Romagna and they don't speak Italian, are they going to do okay? Can they get by?
Bologna, for sure. It's a bigger city and there's a lot more young people, if that makes sense. If you move inland, that's when you're going to struggle a bit more. But you will find a way to communicate. I wouldn't be scared of, you know, how am I going to order food or am I going to survive? You will be able to survive. Nowadays, with your phone, you can use, you know, your phones. It's like everywhere, essentially. If you are in more touristic places, like in Romagna, you'll definitely find a lot of people that speak English. Generally, the older people are, they might not be able to have a conversation with you, but they will understand the basics. But the younger generation, definitely more and more people. It's always been an issue all around Italy. We do study English. Essentially, we start studying English when we are 5, all the way up to like 18, 19 years old, the bare minimum. Like, you know, so I mean, I think, but you must study until you are 15. In Italy, and everyone studies English from when they're 5.
And just a few words so that people who don't speak Italian can go with something just to get into it. How would you say hello to people in Italy?
Ciao, which is ciao, probably everyone knows ciao, yeah.
Please?
Please is per favore.
Per favore. Thank you.
Grazie.
Grazie. Goodbye.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci. And if you're asking, another glass of Lambrusco, please.
Un altro bicchiere di Lambrusco, per favore.
There we go. Useful phrases. Un altro bicchiere di Lambrusco,
yeah. Per favore. That's very definitely handy. What you need, yeah. Yeah. Again, like going back to the wines, obviously you mentioned the Lambrusco. It's not the most famous region for wines. It's not known specifically for their wine. But the cool thing about Italy, and one thing that I love about my country, is that within 20 minutes, anywhere you are, you can find a local producer, from, you know, a tiny small farmer to more sophisticated, like a proper canteen and vineyard. You will be able to find a place that has wine tasting. So I would look around you and try to find a spot like that, because you can find some really affordable experiences where you get to try their wines. And it's always different trying a wine where it's produced. You might have the same bottle in a wine shop back home, but if you've tried that bottle where they've made it, while they explain you how they made it and the time it took to make, you know, from picking the grapes all the way down to getting the juice out, like, it would be a completely different experience and taste.
Especially if you're there when the vines are in full bloom and you're seeing these... the green, you've got the scent of the ripening grapes. Amazing.
The other thing is, like, the canteens you get into, you walk into those, like, those places where the wine is held at the perfect temperature, the smell of you know, the it's hard to describe if you haven't been there, but I would highly recommend it. That's how you want to experience places. Like, you want to go where things are made, where everything starts, and you know, that's where you really get to experience and try and feel what it's like.
It's not just where things are made naturally, though. There's a lot of amazing things made in the region that are big machines. I think it would be wrong of us to talk about Emilia-Romagna and not talk cars.
Yeah, there is this, like, really deep connection between Emilia-Romagna and motors in general. It's cars, but you also have, like, motorbikes. Obviously, some of the best cars in the world are made, like Lamborghini, Ferrari, like, to just name two. Ducati for the motorbikes. Yeah, so some of the biggest brand in the world when it comes to, you know, machines are made in this region. And there's obviously a deep connection to the motors. It's a region of people that like to go fast. That's how it's described very often. Close to the south where I am, one of the best motorbike rider, Valentino Rossi, is actually at the border. It's just off to Marche, but people come there just to visit where he's born. And we've got very close to Cattolica in Misano Adriatico, the world circuit for the MotoGP. And going up at the north, we've got in Imola, it used to be a Formula One autodrome, and it's where the best cars in the world are produced. So yeah, there is definitely a deep connection.
And some of them allow you to visit.
Yeah, definitely. You got the museums, you can visit where those cars are made. And if you're passionate about, you know, cars and motors in general, whether it's motorbikes or cars, it's definitely like places you want to go. You want to go there and feel same thing. Like, you know, if you're passionate about wine, you want to smell the rotting vines. I don't know how to describe the, not rotting, but it's like that smell of, like, you know, yeast and that producer. But if you're passionate about cars, you want to smell maybe like the grease and that motor, like, and where it's made, and really experience things from where they start and where they're made.
Is there one in particular? Because there are so many. Yeah. Is there one which is a great one to start for tourists?
I'd say Maranello, like, you know, for the Ferrari. You've got the museum, and I would highly recommend visiting there. That's where you want to start from, and that's where it all started for Ferrari.
It is amazing. This area, which isn't huge, has had such an impact in the luxury motor world and the competitive motor world. And then the thing that surprised me the most was that Lamborghini started out with tractors.
Yeah, it's definitely like a crazy start. It's weird, but in some cases, like some car producer that produce something really, really good, they might not necessarily make most of their money on that. They might have to produce something else. You're talking about something that is so premium that very few people can afford. It's like a dream. So sometimes, you know, Lamborghini has made more money in tractors than it does in cars, because you can sell a lot more tractors.
That's so funny. I've got one last question before we get into our quick fire round, and that is about tipping. If you go to a restaurant, or if you're going on a tour, are you expected to tip the guide or the person who served you?
Not generally, no. I mean, Italians don't generally tip. I personally do. I've worked in hospitality, and I think if you've had a good meal and you've had a great experience and people have been nice to you, why not? There is no service charge in Italy, and hopefully that will never come to. But generally, restaurants charge 1 or 2 euros for a coperto which is essentially translated as cover, which pays for your table and your breads. You get normally free bread and olive oil. But yeah, it's not a service charge. It goes to the restaurant. Even if you were to leave, like, you know, if it was £96, £97, and you were to leave €100, I think that's nice, but it's not expected. You're not expected to be tipping.
The wrap-up, roundup, quickfire finish is now ready for boarding.
Looking at the whole area of Emilia-Romagna, so you can answer with any of that region in mind, what would you say is the top thing to see or do?
It's hard to pick one. I really love Rimini. So I would probably say the historic center of Rimini. And then going back to the food and do one of the food or wine tasting, either in the Modena or Parma region. That's one side that we haven't covered much, actually. Let me give some justice to Parma, which is, I think it's one the only place that is UNESCO heritage for gastronomy. I might be wrong on this, but they are one of the only places that recognized for like UNESCO for gastronomy, essentially. So it's obviously where Parma ham, Parmesan is made. So I would say one of the things that you want to do would be going in a Parmesan factory and see when they open a wheel of Parmigiano in front of you and taste the Parmigiano straight from the wheel. That's one of the things that I would recommend, definitely. There are some requirements in terms of how old. I believe it's 12 months minimum. So it has to be aged for a certain period of time. They can only use milk from a certain cow. There are some restrictions. So in order to be called Parmigiano Reggiano, it has to have those requirements. The same with, you know, you were saying with the balsamic vinegar and the thyme. So in order to be a balsamic vinegar from Modena and be recognized with that name, you have to have those standards, if that makes sense. I think that's one of the good things about the European Union is that it protects small producer or products from being copied and named the same way.
What would you say is a tourist trap to avoid in Emilia-Romagna?
Generally, I don't think Emilia-Romagna has as many tourist traps because, as I said earlier, we tend to have a lot of like Italian tourists visiting. So it's quite uncommon to actually have tourist traps. Anywhere in Italy, I would stay away if there is a big tourist attraction, if that makes sense. You will find a few restaurants or bars right in front of it. And those are generally the places that tend to be more expensive and the quality won't be the best. In Emilia-Romagna, because we don't have those extremely overcrowded places, you might find that it's more a case of being overpriced rather than being really bad quality.
What's your favorite time to visit Emilia-Romagna in the year?
I would say spring. It's lovely. You start to get the first like really like sunny days and it's not too hot. I love going in July as well because it's my birthday. And because I go in the Romagna side, it's a lovely time of the year. Every evening there are parties, there are festivals, a bit of nightlife as well. There are fireworks. If you want a bit of like a kind of a beachside holiday and you want to enjoy yourself at the beach and also having some, you know, aperitivos in the evenings and walks along the beach with all the festivals and a bit more lights and colors, then the summer, July, August is a very nice time of the year. It does tend to be a bit more busy. Definitely August, where all the Italians are normally on holiday in August, so it'll be one time maybe to avoid. June could be a good one, start of June, because there's still no school holiday in Italy, so you tend to still have a summer holiday vibe, but not so overcrowded. When it comes to the big cities like Bologna, Parma, Modena, I would say springtime is probably the best because it's not too hot. The colors are, as soon as you get out of town, you start to have the flowers, the green all around you is beautiful. Definitely spring or autumn, possibly more spring.
Mm-hmm. What's a good book or film or TV show about the destination area if people want to get in the mood for Emilia-Romagna before they go?
It has to be Fellini, so it has to be La Dolce Vita or Amarcord. It gives you an insight of the characters of people from Emilia-Romagna, the hospitality, the way of being the people from the south in the north, if that makes sense.
The next one I think is going to be a really hard question. What is the top food or drink to try in Emilia-Romagna?
It's really hard. So I mean, when it comes to drink, I think in terms of, yeah, so the Lambrusco, in my opinion, the one from Sorbara, which is on the hills, essentially. They do a rosé version, sparkling, but it's a bit drier, not too sweet. So I would recommend that one. And then in terms of food, you know, the thing is, I don't want to go in something obvious like you know, the cheese, the ragu, which is, you know, what everyone has tried, but it is great. So it's hard not to say. But if you haven't tried, I would say if you haven't tried before, because I don't want to go into the Parma ham, which is quite obvious, but there are different qualities of Parma hams, and you get a really, really good and sweet one. But I would go for the culatello di Zimbello, which is a ham that is produced around the Parma area as well, but specifically to one area. It's super nice and sweet, soft, like, you know, it just melts in your mouth. Go around Parma and find a culatello. You could probably find in other areas of Emilia Romagna, but, you know, again, go to the place and find the people that produce it, try it straight from there.
And final question. If you want to take home a really good, authentic souvenir from Emilia Romagna, what could you be looking for?
I tend to take food, but the only problem is that it runs out really quick. I tend to overstake balsamic vinegar when I visit Modena. And I mean, every place you go, you can bring one and then keep the bottle because generally they're very cool. It's a good souvenir. You have a nice meal, think about the time you've had, and you know, think about the memories and enjoying whether it's the Lambrusco or having your balsamic vinegar on a bit of Parmesan cheese, which you've seen opening in front of you, just thinking about those memories, and that's the best souvenir at the end of the day, together with some nice pictures.
Francesco from Cyclo Holidays, thank you so much for unlocking Emilia Romagna for us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, that's all for this episode of the Destination Unlocked podcast. Thank you again to Francesco from Cyclo Holidays, who has just added so many things to my list of what to see and do in Italy, which, as anyone who knows me knows, is one of my absolute favorite countries. Hope you enjoyed this talk, and if you would like to join us for another one, make sure you follow the podcast wherever you're currently listening. I'll catch you next time. Bye bye.